Welcome to Telling Future Generations, the radio ministry of Child Evangelism Fellowship of Illinois. Now here is your host, Katrina Forseth, a missionary serving as State Director for CEF of Illinois.
Hi, and thank you for listening to Telling Future Generations, where we seek to ignite God's people with a passion and to equip them in telling future generations about God and His Word. Just recently, CEF of Illinois held our second annual ministry symposium with guest speaker Josh McDowell. For the next several weeks, we will be airing Josh McDowell's two talks that he shared with us that evening for our fundraising event called The Gospel Now. In this first segment, we'll be listening to Josh as he shares about the relevancy of the gospel and how our culture has moved away from biblical absolutes by the result of four influential movements that have impacted and affected our world today, including our gospel witness and reaching the future generations for Christ. This is the first of a three-part series that we'll be airing entitled The Relevancy of the Gospel. We hope you enjoy today listening to Josh McDowell.
But I wish we could just sit around the table and look each other in the eye and I could share my heart and mind on this subject tonight. Now, what I'm going to share tonight, it will probably not be what you expected to hear. I hardly ever say what people expect to hear. It's going to be different than what you thought you would hear at CEF. But if you hear me through this evening, I'll guarantee you, you will never think the same way the rest of your life, especially when it comes to children. But you're going to have to trust me. You're going to have to listen to me. And by the time I finish the first and especially the second time, you will never listen to television. You'll never walk into your church and think the same way again about children. I've had the privilege now for 55 years working with kids. When I started ministry, the Dead Sea was only sick. It's been so long. I mean, I can't believe it. But I want to draw upon the 55 years a ministry to young people in 139 countries, how I see youth today and children. In 1 Chronicles 12:32, it says this about the sons of Issachar. The sons of Issachar, men who understood the times in order with knowledge of what Israel should do. They understood the times in order to know what to do. So many people jump into the answer before they ever analyze the problem. And my daddy once, when he was sober, passed down some good information to me when he said, "Son, a problem well defined is half solved." And that's true. That's true. I don't think you really know what the solution is to anything until you analyze the problem. So what I want to do tonight is try to analyze the problem. But it's going to be just a little heady. These parents down here with these little kids, the kids can explain it to you parents later. It's going to be a little challenging to you. Some of you older folks are not used to thinking some of the ways I'm going to be speaking tonight. But for the sake of your grandchildren, for the sake of children throughout Peoria, Illinois, the country, the world, please take heart to what I'm going to share. How do we look at young people today? The need to reach them. Children. I'm going to talk about three events, historically, progressions. The first is this, and then I'll cover the next two in the second one. To understand culture today and the need that we must reach young people before 12 years of age is that we have had a complete epistemological shift. What in the world is epistemology? I have no idea. No. We get the word epistle from it. Epistemology. See, all big words have little meanings. Big words are for frustrated professors. Every big word has a little meaning. And all epistemology means is the study of truth. What is truth and where does it come from? That's it. That's all epistemology means, the study of truth. But the study of what truth is and where it comes from has totally, completely, 100% changed. It has shifted. Let me show you what I mean. When I use the term born again, It would be a person who would say, I personally trusted Jesus Christ as Savior and Lord, and if I were to die today, I know I'd go to heaven because he died for my sins. Now, it doesn't mean they're born again, but that's how I would define the term I used. When I use the term truth, I don't refer to truth as most people do as absolute truth. Somehow that term, absolute truth, just grates me the wrong way. And so I use the term universal truth. Now, the universal truth is the same as absolute truth, but it's easier for my mind to grasp it. Universal truth is that which is true for all people in all places at all times. When Jesus said to the Jewish crowd, I am the truth, it wasn't just for those before him. It's for all people in all places at all times. It is universal. Now, to get to where I want to go, I want to use these two screens as video screens of history. At the top, as you look at a video screen of history, you have a created God, a personal creator God at the top of the screen, created man at the bottom of the screen. Now, this was a paradigm of truth for hundreds of years, that all truth, scientific truth, psychological truth, historical truth, philosophical truth, metaphysical truth, theological truth, all stem from a personal creator God. Then there was created man who would respond to that truth. For hundreds of years, that was a paradigm, the model of truth. And then onto the scene came what I call four movements. The first one is the Renaissance. The Renaissance came onto the scene and said, we don't need God. Now notice why. See how great man is. This is when they started to do the statues of the bare body and the graphics and everything else. And what the Renaissance did was bring the concept that there's a personal creator God about a quarter of the way down the video screen of history, and upgraded man about a quarter of the way. But you know, it wouldn't have gone further than that if it hadn't been followed by the Enlightenment. The Enlightenment came onto the scene and said, we don't need God. Now notice the difference. See how great man can reason. He can reason through the sin problem. He can reason through salvation. Probably the best graphic I've ever seen to understand the Enlightenment is this graphic here of a captain of a ship, and it's in a huge storm, and Jesus standing next to him with his arm almost on his shoulder. And remember the caption read, Christ, or Jesus, is the master of my destiny. Now picture in mind, what the Enlightenment did was take that arm off. And the caption read, I am the master of my destiny. That's the clearest concept I've seen in the Enlightenment. Now, what the Enlightenment did was bring the concept of personal creator God another quarter of the way down history and elevated man about a quarter of a way. And then onto the scenes came what I call a movement. I think it had tremendous metaphysical, philosophical, theological implications in life called the Industrial Revolution. I think the Industrial Revolution ended about 1994. Now we're in the digital age. But about 1994, I think the Industrial Revolution. This is when great patents, machines just exploded in the world. And what the Industrial Revolution did was say, we don't need God. Now why? It's a different reason. See how great man can create. And what the Industrial Revolution did was bring God another quarter of the way down the screen of history and elevated man about a quarter of the way. But they couldn't answer two questions, the Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and the Industrial Revolution. The origin of man and the origin of the universe. And then at the turn of the century came evolution, Darwinism. And Darwinism basically said, we don't even need the concept of a personal creator God. And with that, the concept that there's a personal creator God in which all truth resides from and man responds to fell off the video screen of history. And it left created man. This is a God is dead movement. It's not that like some evangelists always say, oh, sure, God was alive and he died. That has nothing to do with it. The God is dead is that the concept there's a personal creator God in which all truth resides, that concept died. That's what the God is dead movement was about. And it left man. Out of this right here, you can trace almost every thought process today? Let me show you what I mean. What is the greatest virtue in all of history that's the number one virtue in the world now? It outclasses every other virtue in all of history. Outclasses freedom, justice, everything. Can anyone tell me what's the number one virtue in the world right now? Tolerance. Tolerance. You can't even be a member of the United Nations if you don't adhere to tolerance. Came right out of this process. You say, how? Very simple. Tolerance is not what you think it is. It's gone through a total change in meaning. Tolerance today means all values, all beliefs, all lifestyles, all claims to truth are equal. And if you dare to say there's a value, a belief, a lifestyle, or a claim to truth that's greater or lesser than another, then by definition you are a bigot and intolerant. Why? You made a moral judgment. How can you say that your value, belief, or lifestyle, or claim to truth is better than mine? Where's your external reference point? That's only your opinion. Are you with me, folks? There's no internal reference point to refer to. That's only your opinion. That's your belief. That's your feeling. You think I'm wrong in that? Where do you think you get the most popular phrase in the world with young people? I just came back from the country of Albania. Remember, just a few years ago, it was the most isolated country in history, Albania. And you hear it there. Well, that might be true for you, but it's not true for me. Why? Because all truth is personal perspective, personal opinion. Because there's no external reference point. Out of this same progression came, you might almost call it the second greatest virtue today, and I don't think they're virtues, but they call it that, is multiculturalism. I wish people would get it through their thick skulls. Multiculturalism has absolutely nothing to do with the color of your skin, your creed, your ethnic background, or anything. That's a lame duck. Multiculturalism has nothing to do with that. Unless you listen to most Christians and most people, that's all it is. It has nothing to do with the color of your skin or anything. Multiculturalism is tolerance applied to culture. That all cultural values, all cultural beliefs, all cultural claims to truth, all cultural lifestyles are what? Equal. Because how can one culture judge another culture? Where's your external reference point? Do you get that, folks? Where's your external reference point? The Christians say, well, there's a Bible. Well, that's your opinion. That's your perspective. Almost every thought today goes right straight back to that.
Thanks again for listening to Telling Future Generations, and we hope you join us again next week for the second segment of this three-part airing of Josh McDowell on the relevancy of the gospel. May the Lord bless you today.
Thank you for joining us today for Telling Future Generations, the radio ministry of Child Evangelism Fellowship of Illinois. To learn how you can partner with Child Evangelism Fellowship to reach children in your community, please call 309-688-9699 or visit cefofillinois.com. Please join us again next week at the same time for Telling Future Generations.
Children learn biblical truth in America's elementary schools?
I learned about God because they taught me so much about Him.
Right now, Child Evangelism Fellowship is taking Good News Clubs to our nation's elementary schools immediately after school.
He's the Creator, and His love is endless.
Make this your ministry.
It's just really, really special.
Go to cefonline.com. That's cefonline.com.